Welcome to a World of Good podcast. I'm Nate Tapman.
And I'm Andrew Gale.
And we are two friends
who love Jesus,
care about the church,
and travel the world to share stories of people who do the same.
Our conversations happen in all kinds of places,
like a coffee shop in an airport terminal,
or even the back of a crowded taxi.
But no matter where we go, from Argentina to Zimbabwe,
we capture stories of the good God is doing around the world.
And we hope those stories will do you a world of good.
So we are here with my good friend, and I think we're good friends still, good friend and former coworker, Chris Kazmarek.
I guess it depends who you're talking to, because if you're talking to me, I may not say that we're good friends. So, yeah. Were you talking about Chris or were you talking about me? I'm hurt now. Am I your good friend?
I've already introduced you as our co-host, Andrew Gale, which you are also part of this interview. So I didn't feel the need to introduce you over again, unless you're that important. Okay.
This is going to be my favorite episode, doing this with Chris Kazmarek, I think. I'm so excited.
Both of you have had too much coffee. I don't know what time it is there.
Introduce me and talk about how awesome I am.
It's 6 hours. Yeah, it's 6 hours earlier than it is here in Spain. But whatever time it is there, you guys have had way too much coffee. Yeah. As I said, we are here with my good friend, not Andrew Gale, but Chris Kazmarek. Chris serves as what is your title?
My title is Outreach Pastor, officially.
Outreach Pastor. I was about ready to call you Missions Pastor, but missions is part of your role, is one of the responsibilities that you have at County Line. But maybe for our listeners, why don't you just share a little bit about what it is that you do at County Line, what areas of ministry do you oversee? And oh, by the way, yes, we are also here with our co-host, Andrew Gale. And Andrew and Chris happen to be in the same room together. So that's why Andrew has said this is going to be one of the most fun interviews that
it's going to be awesome
that we've done.
And because we're both Enneagram 7s, which means that we just automatically have fun when we're around each other, which
Lord
is why
help me.
We started this conversation, preparing for this conversation 30 minutes ago, and we're just now starting to record.
I have interrupted these guys at least two or three times in the last 30 minutes. And here I've asked Chris a question, and I'm already having to repeat the question because Andrew has interrupted. But yes,
sorry,
can you
repeat the question?
Yes, I am very excited to be with you guys today. So I serve as the outreach pastor at County Line. So that entails a lot of different things. I mean, the easiest way to define it is that I'm in charge of both our local and our global outreach. So locally, that looks like just kind of connecting with our partners and checking in on them, seeing what kind of needs they would have. We do, one of the bigger things we do is called Faith in Action. And so we do quarterly service projects that I kind of coordinate. I have a team of coordinators, and we're in a unique area. We are surrounded by cornfields in the country, but we're a pretty large church. And we really don't have a community. We are called County Line because we are on the county line between two counties.
Very original name.
I know, right? I know. We're really, really original. So we are really surrounded by about 8 to 10 different communities. And so what we decided a couple years back was like, let's get a coordinator for each of these communities and let's serve each of these communities so that we're a regular presence in there. So locally, that's one of the biggest things we do. And then globally, it's checking in on missionaries like Nate that we support, Nate and Stacy and some other ones. So it's checking in on there. And then impact trips is a huge, huge part. That's been, obviously the pandemic really slowed a lot of that sort of stuff down, but it really was, the pandemic was good because it gave me some time to be able to really look and really look into, okay, what does missionary care look like? How do we do that better? And then just look at, you know, really preparing for impact trips again.
And now pre-time at County Line, you actually served on the mission field. You actually served globally. Is that right? So tell us asking you to tell us about your time serving on the missions field, that could probably be its own episode in of itself. But what are the bullet points of where you served and kind of what your role was?
Yeah, so in 2013, I was serving as a youth pastor at a church in Maricopa, Arizona. And there was a mission trip offered to Kenya. And so me and my wife decided, hey, let's go check it out. So went on that trip. Long story short, she knew she had a friend that was serving that used to work at the hospital with her. She's a nurse. Yeah. And so she was living in Uganda. So we said, let's take a side trip to Uganda. So we took this little side trip, and just being there, it was just very obvious that this was something that would be a really good fit for us.
Wow.
So we took that trip in, I want to say July of 2013. And by November we were on the field.
Wow.
So it was a very, very quick turnaround. The ministry was really new. So we really didn't have to raise what a lot of missionaries have to raise these days. So we served in Uganda. We served at, my wife was a nurse, as I said. And so she served in a clinic. We worked with children in conflict with the law. So it was kids in prisons, kids in remand homes, which are basically the awaiting sentencing. So she worked at the clinic there. I kind of did a lot of random things. I did human resources for all of our Ugandan employees. But then I also helped the kids with recreation while I was there. And so, yeah, we spent a year there. And so that year really gave me a heart for missions. Mm. I really was able to see God's heart for justice because there was a lot of things there. I'll give you one example. When we would go to these prisons, and some days we would just show up. We went the same day every week. We would go to the big prison, and all of a sudden there's 100 new kids, and we have no idea where they're from. And a lot of times they ended up being really young kids. Mm. So 2-3 years old, and we would find out that these kids were actually from a tribe up north called the Kirimajong. And so what happens is it's kind of the grass is greener on the other side idea. So the parents say, let's make our way to Kampala. Life will be better there. It's so rough out here. They get to Kampala. They end up begging on the streets. And then as a ambassador from another country is coming into town, the government comes and what they would call it sweeping the streets. And so they'd grab all the kids up, put them in the back of a truck and take them to the prison so that the streets seem cleaner than they are.
Wow.
And so those kids didn't do anything wrong. And so that was a really hard thing for us to process when we were there of like, why are these kids here, God? You know, this is not a easy thing to see. And I mean, there's a face that I'm picturing as I'm talking about this, a little girl named Maria that we really connected with. But yeah, through prayer and stuff, I mean, that was really like what I felt through that time was God saying, like, I don't like this either.
Mm.
And so that was, like I said, it was really a time for me to see God's heart for justice. And really, it was my first, obviously, big experience of missions. I had gone on mission trips before, but this was obviously long term.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you guys also had a unique experience. You guys had been married for how long?
Yeah. At that point, we were married for about 2 years. So,
two years. And you did not have any other teammates or team members there who were married, correct? You lived with a bunch of single people. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So like I said, the ministry was very young. So I think they were about 3.5 years old when we got there. So what they did was they put all of the missionaries just in one giant house. This is kind of how it worked. So it was us and a bunch of single women. My joke was always that if I left something out, it would be like I would walk downstairs and my wife would be like, hey, make sure you put that away. And then this girl Emily would be like, hey, make sure you put that away. And then Catherine would be like, make sure you put that away. And I'm like, all right, I have four wives. I get it.
But you have to be careful saying that in some of those contexts.
It's true, right? Yeah. But it was a great experience. We were still very close with all of those people that we lived with and served with. And so it was very unique and different. Yeah. And we always joke that year should count as 3 years of marriage because of how hard that was, especially early on. But yeah, it was a great experience.
One of the things I love about this is that you have experienced both sides of, because we're going to talk about missions trips today. You've experienced both the side in Uganda of receiving, but now you're on the side of sending. And so I think that actually puts you at a really unique place to be able to speak into this conversation about missions trips. So I'm excited for just to hear what you have to share in that. Yeah. So can you tell us, is it okay, Nate, if I just jump into the next question?
Just jump right in. Go for it.
Okay. So why are trips important, an important part of the mission at County Line?
Yeah, I would say a couple different reasons. For one, it's really a way, in my mind, it's a way to get people out of their comfort zone and experience God in another culture. Like I said, our context is very rural, very, yeah, just kind of way out in the country. And so not a lot of people have passports. Not a lot of people have travel experience. And so the comfort zone thing is huge for me. I really want people to see that. But then the experiencing another culture thing is huge too. There's a lot of trips, and I'll talk about this one later in some other questions, but I mean, we took a trip to Paris in 2018 with Samir with his ministry at home. And I mean, just for people to see, oh, they're like this refugee crisis, we hear about it all the time, but to see it and to put faces to that is huge for us.
So at the end of the day, maybe not even at the end of the day, what would you say are some of your, I know, and you mentioned getting people out of their comfort zones, being located in a rural area. Not a lot of people can experience cross-cultural experiences in their own local context, that sort of thing. So how do you process, or where do you go, or where do you think about going in helping people expand their view and experience of God, other cultures, other languages, the way in which people worship God? How do you think through that? Or what do you think about when you're deciding on where to go and who gets to go on these trips?
Yeah, so it's a couple different things. As far as when we're trying to decide, you know, what places do we want to go? This was something that when I first started at County Line, it was something that we wanted to grow. So we wanted to grow impact trips. And so I started looking, okay, we were doing one to Guatemala every year. And that was pretty much all we were doing. And so, and that was with a longtime partner. We've been supporting this ministry since 2011. So I kind of started developing, like, let's look at that model a little bit more. And so then as we started to grow them, I looked at who are other partners that we could go with. And so Three Worlds, is we support lots of missionaries in Three Worlds. We're very connected with Three Worlds in Europe and the Middle East. And so that was the next thing that made sense. So every year now we do a trip somewhere to Three Worlds. We did Paris, we've done the UK. We've been hoping to do Italy for, it'll be 3 years now running.
Yay, COVID.
So that's really what that looks like. I also try to be as spread out as possible to give people different options. Yeah. So that's what as you research impact trips and stuff, mission trips, like that's one thing that they say is one of the biggest deciding factors for people is it's like price,
yep,
and location. And so I try to spread us out. So we got Guatemala, that's pretty close. We have one within the US that we do to Arizona every year. That way if somebody says, you know, I'm not ready to do an international trip, you can go to Arizona. We go to the Indian reservation there. Then we go, yeah, like I said, we go to Europe. And then sometimes I've had Africa trips in the past too. Yeah. And so the last one I did, I contacted the regional coordinator at the time, who's Mike and Heather Webb, and just said, hey, is there somewhere that we could go that would be helpful for us to go? Because I don't want to go somewhere just to go somewhere. And that's a big philosophy thing for me. We're not going to just send a team to send a team. We want to make sure that we have a purpose and that we're helpful when we go. Mm-hmm. And I would say some of that comes from my time in Uganda as well, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm, we saw those teams come that really just kind of made things more difficult for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so, yeah, that's as far as deciding what trips to do. That's kind of we try to do partnerships with our trips. If there's a new trip that we haven't done, I will go and scout the location and the place and the ministry beforehand. Maybe I'll take somebody, one or two people with me from the church. But yeah, that's kind of the deciding. As far as you want me to talk about people, how we get people going on trips.
Yeah. So I, and again, just to give the listeners some context too, I know you're sharing a lot of this, but I know that there's been a lot of thought and planning. And as you mentioned earlier, because of COVID, it's given you a lot more time to really deliberately think through how you do missions trips, impact trips at County Line. And so you're kind of, I know that you're saying these things not necessarily flippantly, but these decisions that you've made, I know have come through a lot of research and reading and asking questions mm-hmm. and your personal experience and yeah. things like that. And so one of the questions I did have, because I know you've thought through this as well, is how do you decide who gets to go on a trip? And not that you're trying to be exclusive by any means, but there's an intentionality behind the participants. And so maybe just share a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. So when it comes to the who, it really depends on the trip. There are times like that Paris trip I talked about. That was a trip that we did invite only. And some of that was because we knew we needed a small team. The plan for that trip was to do some training for their core team over there. So we knew we didn't really want more than four or five people. And also on top of that, when you have a location like Paris, you need to be a little careful to have people go, ooh, I want to go take a vacation to Paris. Mm-hmm. So that was one where it was a ask only. And so there were people within the church that I knew would be good, whether they had done trainings like this in the past or whether they had traveled and had good experiences like that in the past. I asked some people. So that's one example. Most of our trips, I just kind of open up in general and I know, okay, this is the number that we can fit. So I always do applications. Most of the time, I'm going to accept everybody that applies because really, I mean, whether it's, if it's a building trip, when we're going to build a building, yeah, it would be great to have some contractors, some people that have experience in construction, but I also want the people that have never built before to be on that trip too, because that's an experience for them as well. So I don't like to limit it too much unless I have to. This, like I mentioned, this Italy trip, that's one where in 2020, we opened that trip before all the pandemic hit. But that was one where I said, like, this can take about 5 to 10 people. So you have to fill out an application and we're going to go through. And if we have more, and again, the reason for that is it's Italy. So it sounds like a fun vacation where I don't want people going on my impact trips because it's a fun vacation. I want them going because they want to serve and experience God in a new culture and in a new way.
Yeah, I love what you're sharing. And I love that you're thinking about cost. So different locations that are able to support, you know, people in different places, different stages, ages and stages. You know, you have those that are some of the people that may have the most free time are some of the people that may have the least amount of funding. And so they may want to go and serve, you know, someone is just out of college may want to go and serve, but not have the financial resources to do that. Or, yeah, I think that's great that you're thinking through those. I think the application is really smart because it at least forces someone to kind of think through why they want to go on a trip and those kind of pieces. One of the things I find is always difficult is the, for lack of a better term, the marketing side of it. You know, I think that a phrase that you hear is, you know, how you catch them is how you keep them. So like if you end up, you know, trying to really sell this trip, this is going to be the best experience you've ever had. You created this expectation that may be difficult to manage. Or on the other side, if you don't make it something that someone sounds like they should be a part of, you may miss out on capturing people's imagination for what God may be calling them to. So how do you, when you think through talking about trips to the church and kind of marketing those pieces, how do you go about doing that?
That is very difficult.
We don't ask the easy questions.
I know.
But
so there's a couple different things we do. So what I started doing this, we hired a videographer back in like 2018-ish, 2017-ish. And so that's been a big thing for us. So we have a full-time videographer on staff. So one of the things that I now do is not every time we do a trip, but at least once to twice a year, I have somebody from that trip on video sharing their testimony of that trip, something that we can then put up for the whole church on a Sunday morning. And like September is our month where we highlight our mission trips for the following year. And so gotcha. I just got one filmed and we're going to be showing that in like late September to promote that. So So that's one way that we really do promotion. But
and to add to that, I mean, because you're going to the same locations, you can show videos that are connected to places you've been. I think that's really important because there are some churches that it's a different place every year. And so that makes it a little more complicated to actually show this longer term partnership and story. So I love that you're capturing what's happening because you know that could be a story that impacts someone and it maybe and pushes them to engage in the future. So I love that. That's great.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think something I've learned just in time in ministry is that a story is going to be way more powerful than a highlight video of the trip. And so we're learning that. I think we're learning that in general at County Line with a lot of different things. But so that's something that we're really focused on. So I would say as far as like the promotion versus expectation, all that stuff is you have to promote it without lying, I guess. I mean, I remember
that's a good thing for a church to practice.
I know, right? I know, right? Well, there's a book we're reading with a global group we're doing with Andrew. It's called Serving with Eyes Wide Open.
Yeah.
And there's an example in there of this, the most cringy little example of them promoting a trip to somewhere. I want to say it was like Mexico, somewhere in Latin America, where they say, hey, we're going to have this trip and you're going to be in like comfortable hotels. We're going to be eating chips and salsa
chips
the whole time.
I love that.
And I'm just like, I hate that. Like, that is not what we want our mission trips. That's exactly what I'm going against of like, this is not a vacation.
Yes.
We are going, we may stay in Paris. We stayed in a hotel and the hotel was nice. Like, there's this delicate balance of like, I'm going off topic here, but like, there's this delicate balance where people feel like, oh, I have to be like sleeping on a wooden bed in the middle of the jungle in order for it to be a mission trip and in order to be serving God. And that's not true either. Like, we can be comfortable. We can have fun on these trips. We can go and do touristy things. That's all fine. But like, to sell it that way is I'm very against
there's
that.
People that have expectations on both ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
Those that want it to be all comfortable and those that want it to be all difficult and mm-hmm. you know, we should sweat through our clothes the entire time, and those that think that if we don't have air conditioning that it can't possibly be a place that you'd ever want to visit. And so you're trying to navigate those expectations.
Yeah. So I mean, I would say moral of the story, we promote by I don't use the we're going to sleep in nice hotels. I talk about what are we going to do when we're there? How are we going to serve people? And my trips, it varies. Like we have trips that are all relational where we're just there experiencing the culture, being with people. We have trips that are all building. Mm-hmm. And so it's different and you're going to get different people on those trips. But so once people are signed up and they've put in their deposit, then that's when I can really temper the expectations and go through, this is exactly what this trip is going to look like. And sometimes when you're going through an organization, like our trip in Guatemala, those are easy. I don't really have to plan much. But with the Three Worlds trip, I mean, I'm working with the person on the ground. And Nate, you know what it's like working with Europeans trying to plan 9 months out. It's not the easiest. And so that Paris trip, that was one where I was
on their priority list.
I know, right? And so that Paris trip was one where I was like, guys, I honestly don't know what this trip is going to look like. Yeah. Like, I know we're going to be doing some training. We might be on our own for a lot. And honestly, the first 2 days of that trip were tourism, but tourism with a purpose.
Yes.
You know, tourism.
To understand the city, understand the context.
Yes. So, I mean, it's not just like, oh, let's just go to Notre Dame and just like hang out. Like, we went to Notre Dame and I did a ton of research beforehand of what is the history of this building in relation to the city? What does it mean? Mm-hmm. What does it mean for Christianity in this city?
Yeah.
And so like, that's how I do the tourism part of those trips. So it's a lot of different things, but you just have to, I'm honest with my teams. Like, hey, this is what this trip is going to look like. Be prepared. Like, and that's what I told that team.
Yeah. It was a learning experience.
Yeah,
you went, like, you know, to learn and understand. We want to understand the post-Christian context.
Absolutely.
Because that helps us understand how we're going to serve and connect in this community.
Absolutely.
So Chris, you're talking a lot right now. You're talking a lot about your pre-planning or your pre-trip meetings And so I just maybe just back up a little bit and at a high level, 30,000 foot level, maybe just take us through, you know, once somebody signs up for a trip, what can they expect, you know, their pre-trip planning to look like maybe while they're on the trip itself. And then I know you do some post-trip stuff as well. Maybe just take us through that process. And you're kind of talking a little bit about it, but I know that the pre-trip planning part is tempering expectations. And maybe there's a story or two that you could share in terms of expectations that somebody had going into it. Did they listen to you during the trip, and what happened as a, you know, consequence? And maybe you don't have a story to share. I'm kind of lobbing a softball to you, but yeah, how would you just answer that question, or how would you answer that question?
Yeah. So basically the way it works is I do a big, what I call it, my Impact Trip Expo. And I do that in September of every year. And that is for the trips that are coming up the following year. And so we have in our big, we call our gathering space, I guess it would be like a big lobby of the church. It's a big open area. We set up a bunch of tables and we just have as much information as we can about each of the trips that are coming up. So at least at the very basic level, I have tentative meeting dates for interest meetings. I have tentative trip dates, approximate cost, and basic information about what we're going to do on those trips. So at that time, people can come and just gather information. They can put their name down without committing to anything. It's just a way to say, hey, I'm interested in this trip. And when we get closer to the interest meetings, contact me and let me know. And so that's all that is. So we do that. And then, and I would say the interest meetings are usually about 6 months out. And so I do an interest meeting one day, and then I wait a month. I do another interest meeting, and then a deposit's due the week after that. So we give them two opportunities, and we do interest meetings at our campuses as well. We have two campuses. So I'm doing lots of that kind of stuff. So Once they have a, it depends on the trip. So the cheaper trips, I do a $100 non-refundable deposit that holds their spot. And what I tell people is I say, with that deposit tells me, buy me a plane ticket. So
you're putting, if you're going to buy a plane ticket, I mean, you're putting more money down than just $100. So it's, you're kind of saying you're promising that this is something you're moving forward to, but we don't expect you to have all the funds yet raised.
Right. And that's not to say that I buy plane tickets right then, but it's saying buy me one. So you're committing then. Yeah. So depending on the trip, it's either $100 or $200 non-refundable deposit. So from that point then, and they also have to submit an application with that deposit. From that point, usually about 4 months out. So usually then there's like a month break, and that's usually, I'm working to see my side of it. They're not doing anything. I'm planning all the meetings that we're going to have beforehand, which I'll talk about those in a second. I'm talking to a travel agent. I am starting to look at flights, seeing what kind of deals are out there, what the best deal is. We live in, like, we're near Fort Wayne. We're about half an hour from Fort Wayne. So they have an airport. It's always this, like, Fort Wayne is a little bit more expensive, or we can fly out of Chicago. We're in this area where everything's 4 hours away. You could go Chicago, Detroit, like all of these, they're all right in that 2.5 to 4 hour range. So yeah. I try to get out of, you know, it's one of those logistic things where we look at price differences and all that, booking hotels, all that kind of stuff on the ground. So then about 4 months out, we begin our trip training, our pre-trip training. So I actually use Global Strategy, has a great one. I'll promote that.
Wow. Yeah.
You guys have
Thank you. We'll take that.
Yeah. You guys have a great one, I believe written by Andrew Gale.
Well, no, it's compiled. I didn't write
compiled,
most of it.
Yeah. There you go. Compiled by Andrew Gale. But no, that's what we use. It's a great It really is great. I think it eases people into the trip. So,
and we did not choose you to come and speak on this because I didn't even know that you use that. That's awesome.
I have it with me today.
I know. I saw it when you brought it in. I was like, oh, wow. Did Nate tell him that he had to talk about this?
Yeah, he did. It was part of the stipend that you guys are paying me.
That's
for
right. This is the second guest that we've had that has referenced us sending them a check. That happened with Esther as well. I feel like giving expectations.
Do they think we make money from this podcast or something?
Yeah, right. You can send me a check. No, but that's great. And we'll link on our resources page. That is a free,
Sure.
People can download those free meetings and look through that. And there's videos to help. It's all self-guided so that someone can do it themselves. They don't have to have someone train them to do it, which is great. But yeah, we'll link all that for people. That's awesome that you use it. I'm glad it's getting used and it's beneficial.
We really like, the way it kind of guides people, it kind of builds, you know? So you have it talks about missions in the Bible first. And so what does the Bible say about missions, about mission trips? Then we just talk about the global church, which that's one of my favorite ones because it shows us how, we always think as Americans, we're we're the best at being missionaries. we're the biggest country. Yep. And that meeting disrupts all that. and then you talk about culture, which there's some fun things that you guys have in there for the culture piece. And then the last one's community. And that's really how do you deal with conflict on the trip if it comes up and what kind of personalities do we have on the trip? There's a little personality sort of assessment, very short, short one, but it's been helpful, I think, in the past. So, when we come back, I will do a post-trip meeting as well. So after that trip, I usually sit down with them and just say, hey, tell me your experiences with it. I pull out my notebook and I write down anything people say, and sometimes it's great. I get to report back to the missionaries and say, man, people loved their time there. They really just loved the experience they got to have. Yeah. So it's always good. That's always a good meeting. And then sometimes we get back from trips and people are just really struggling with man, it was so, what I saw out there was so different than what I'm seeing here, and it's how am I dealing with that? And so we kind of talk through that kind of stuff too.
Well, I think that brings up a good point for me because we often hear the term or hear people say, when you go on a mission trip, it's so life-changing, or this, and I know people where that has been the reality. I mean, I can speak from myself. I went as a young kid to Mexico. That changed the trajectory of my life. I mean, quite literally, I started learning Spanish, and I think that I'm doing what I'm doing now because of those experiences. It wasn't just one trip, it was multiple, but I mean, it has impacted my life in a marked way. But I think there's also people who come back. I mean, of all the thousands and thousands of people, millions of people, really, in the United States that go on missions trips every year, there's a lot that return and it doesn't change anything, And so if you think back on trips you've taken, do you see a marked change in people's discipleship when they return? And if so, what do you think helps make that happen? And if not, why isn't that happening? And what can we do in order to really build into the discipleship aspect of trips?
Yeah, I think that it just depends, honestly. I think you have to go into it with the right attitude.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing that not everybody goes into it with the right attitude. I'll give you an example. There's a guy at our church. He is actually our campus pastor at our Auburn campus. His name's Kevin. And Kevin never wanted to leave the country. He never felt a need to leave the country. Mm-hmm. He was fine staying in America his whole life.
Yeah.
And we did a trip to Guatemala. And I don't really even know. I don't think I went and recruited him by any means. He just decided to go. And that Kevin is Mr. Evangelist. Let's just, and this was not an evangelism type of trip, but he loves just talking to people about Jesus. And so what I think was huge for him, for one, was to realize, this was a really good thing for me to experience another culture.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing is the Big C Church, I think we separate evangelism and justice too much. And I think that's a conversation that's been happening in a lot of circles. But I think for Kevin, it was really important for him to see that justice and evangelism don't have to be separated,
yeah.
but that they can be together. And so especially he at the time when he left on that trip, he was hired as the campus pastor, but like nobody knew about it yet. Like I think he may have told people on that trip.
So he's like keeping a secret.
Right. And so I think it was so huge for him to go on that trip right before he becomes this campus pastor. And I think it's been huge for him to go on there on that trip and experience what he experienced and to see, oh, justice and evangelism can come together and it and they're not at odds with one another.
Yeah. I think that's so good. It's such a good reminder because I think you're exactly right. I think so much of this is about timing in people's lives. You can do all of the preparation because what I want to hear is you say something like, well, we prepare them and that's how they, and you know, because then it feels like I have control over the ability to make something happen.
Yeah.
But there's no amount of preparation that will get you there. It really has to do with it being the right time, the person being in the right frame of mind, which is just such a reminder to me of the importance of prayer and the Holy Spirit, recognizing that, you know, praying that the Holy Spirit would be working on people's lives, that this would be an experience that would be transformative to them, and that the Holy Spirit would bring them to places where they would be challenged in new ways. And I think that I can get very much in a mentality of we can figure out how to do this, we can fix this, we can research our way into it, we can intelligently make ourselves, you know, make the case for whatever. And at the end of the day, it's really about trusting that God is working in people's lives and knowing that that's happening and then bringing them in a journey where they can experience these things.
And I'll give you a little bit more background on my call onto the mission field, because I think that would be helpful as well. So before that, I went on that mission trip in 2013 to Kenya and Uganda. When I met my wife, she did not want to date anybody because she was going to travel the world and change the world, and she didn't need a man to help her do that.
Well, that's true.
And so I convinced her to marry me.
Which is good.
It is. No, but
for you at least.
But she was really struggling. We were kind of at this point where, okay, we were married for about 2 years at that point. We were living in Arizona. She grew up in Indiana. And so it was one of these where she was like, had finally gotten to the point where she's like, okay, you know what? Like I can accept like that we're going to live in Arizona for a while. I'm going to be a nurse here. I'm still doing important things. And at the same time, I was just going through like just prayer and my devotional time. I was like, you know what? Like that is something I could go and overseas and do some mission work in like 5 or 10 years. That was literally we had this conversation.
Yeah.
She was actually mad at me because she was like, I just got okay with like living here.
Yep.
So this was all right before we left on that trip. And so it's on our minds. We're praying through this stuff. And so we left that trip with the right heart and intention. Yeah. And so when we got to Uganda, I mean, the Kenya experience was great, but it really was Uganda. When we saw the organization that we visited is the one that we worked for. And when we get to the prison and I'm seeing my wife, she is in the clinic helping and I'm throwing a football with some kids. We just kind of like met eyes. And it was one of these where we're like, without even saying words, it was like, we need to do this.
Yeah.
And it was just like a very clear picture of like, this is how an impact trip can change lives.
Yep.
And I don't ever set up expectations. I actually tell people the opposite. I said, this trip is not going to change your, you're not going to change anybody's life on this trip. Your life will be impacted. I'm not going to say it's going to change your life, but you're going to be different because of it.
Yes. Yeah, that's so good.
Chris, at the end of the day, what would you say in the realm of impact trips, short-term missions trips, what is it, if there's one thing, or maybe it's one or two things, what is it that will make or break an impact trip or a short-term trip? What's going to make it either a very powerful experience or a horrific experience?
It's so hard because so much of it is the team that goes. I've never had a bad team, but I will also say one person can mess up the whole dynamics of an entire trip. And that is completely out of our control. I mean, there
and
are
when you say that, when you think of, okay, maybe you have one or a few people in mind, what is it about that one person that's going to make or break the trip or the chemistry of the team or the makeup of the team?
Yeah. So I'll give you a good example and a bad example. So one, we took a trip to Birkenhead, UK in 2019, and that trip was the best team I've ever been a part of on a mission trip. We, as a team, I mean, people from all over the board. I mean, we had a 22-year-old and we had a 65-year-old and everything in between. And
I love that.
And we had just people from very different walks of life, very conservative to you know, not as conservative Christian, you know, as it just people that grew up totally different. It was such a mix of people. It could have been a disaster, but it was, we melded so well and like had so much fun and learned so much. I, from that trip, since I've gotten back from that trip, so that was November of 19. So it's been over, you know, almost coming up on 2 years here. And there's one of the guys on that trip. I meet with him once a month and he like, he does some coaching and like leadership help with me and just really helps me think through a lot of like work stuff. Mm-hmm. He's had, just had some experience in ministry and different things. So that was just such a great, and you can't, it's so hard because it's not like it's, I didn't do anything different to prepare that team than I did another team.
Yeah.
I will say that there were people on that trip. One lady on that trip was, she really just felt like God was telling her she needed to be on this trip. And she said, I don't know how the finances are going to work out.
Yeah.
And I said, well, we will make it happen. And so it was one of those where like all the money came in. Like, wow. I don't even think County Line had to help her outside of like, we offer like little scholarships. I think we pay, if you're going on a County Line sponsored trip, we'll pay 20% of the trip costs if you fill out an application to do that.
Yeah.
You don't have, we're not going to just give it to anybody. You fill out an application. If you fill out an application, you get it.
Yeah.
So,
but that's great though, that you offer some kind of compensation to help people.
But yeah, so that's a great example.
Yeah.
There are, I'm trying to think
now,
of ones
on,
I've been
real
on.
Quick. I want to interject something. As great as this trip to Birkenhead was.
Oh no. I know where
there was a little incident that happened on this trip. I think it would be a
no
great
idea
story
what you're talking
for
about.
Our listeners to hear exactly what happened, Cassie.
I don't know what you're talking about, Nate. No. All right. So we were painting the church building.
Okay.
At the whole building. Like it was huge,
interior.
Tall walls. Interior. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm up on scaffolding and I've painted my area. Right. And so I'm like, can somebody move the scaffold? No, nobody's around. No, everybody's up on a ladder. And so I was like, that's fine. I will just like surf on this thing. And like have my body move the scaffolding,
oh,
right?
Oh, that's never a good idea.
So I start doing that, one, two, and then an entire pan of bucket of paint right on the floor.
Wow. Was it like a 5 gallon, a 5 gallon bucket?
It wasn't, it,
close
no, it
to
was
it?
Like a, it was like a tray, but it was full.
Okay. Oof,
and so I just felt so terrible. And I mean, you guys know the Langfords, they did not let me live that one. He still does not let me live that down. But
and just
surfing,
to be
not,
clear, or
not
just
a good
to
idea.
Just to paint the picture for our listeners.
I see what you did
there. See what I did there. The carpet of the church. I mean, this was in the sanctuary of the church, and the carpet.
Oh, it was carpet.
Was,
I was imagining.
Oh, yeah,
I was imagining
carpet.
A fellowship hall with tile.
No. The carpet of the church is blue. Solid blue, and it was white paint. And the pictures that I saw, it looked like a 5 gallon bucket of paint that had been dumped on this blue carpet in the middle of the sanctuary.
It gets even better too, because not only did I spill the paint, then we're trying to like, you know, you're getting like these big like utility brooms, and I'm using all the strength in to get it out of the carpet, and then I snapped the broom. So I broke the broom. We ended up renting a carpet cleaner, and their carpets have never been cleaner.
Well, there you go. There we go. Moral of the story.
All right. So I digress. So give us the opposite experience.
Yeah. So the opposite experience. I'm gonna preface this with that I didn't do the trip training on this one because I was only on staff for like a week. It was probably would have been my boss that would have been in charge of the trip training at the time.
Who would that have been?
That would have been somebody named Nate Tapman. And so
I don't know.
You can probably blame him. You can probably blame him for this one. So we.
I will preface your preface by saying this is why we hired you.
This is why we hired you. There you go. Yeah. So it's a men's trip to Guatemala, and really the team dynamics were fine. It was great. It was very clear that there was no trip training done because of this experience. So there's a compound where we do most of the ministry work at it's called Village of Hope is where it is. And so most of the time you're there, you're doing construction stuff, but one or two days you go out into like the villages, and they have these certain villages where they hand out just rice and beans and things to people in the area. And so we're going through, and I'm just kind of sitting back and watching. I'm brand new on staff. I'm just trying to experience this and meet new partners, meet new people that are on the trip. And man, we're probably towards the end of the walkthrough. I mean, we have gone to 10 houses already.
Yeah.
All of a sudden I see out of the corner of my eye an older gentleman at our church just handing out cash to every single villager.
Well, there's that.
And my heart sank. And I was like, what is happening? And so when we got back to the U.S., I talked to Nate about it, and we had to tell the missionary. And it was one of those things where, like, you know, they had these. Now it's an if you do that, the problem is that then those next time there's a bunch of white people, maybe that's the expectation is now there's going to be cash again. And so it was just a conversation we had to have, and it was not great. And I mean, that's the kind, that's why you do that. And I say that now every single time, and I'm always shocked at, you know, I say you can't just hand out money or gifts to people. And I'm shocked. It's happened more than once where somebody goes, really?
Yep.
And I go, yeah. Like, she's like, this happened once in trip training, that's the best place for it to happen.
Yeah.
Where I said that, and a lady goes, oh, but I've given out like jewelry to kids before. And I say, like, no, you can't, because if you give one kid jewelry, they all need it. And we saw it in Uganda. There would be teams that would bring candy, and the older kids would physically hurt the younger kids and steal their candy. It's just stuff like that that you got to really think through every part of this.
And you have to listen to the people on the ground. And that's one of the things I had an experience like that. I was with a church, and I had not done the trip training, but I'm not sure that it would have helped this situation or not. But you know that itch when people go on missions trips and they feel like they have to be doing something. And we had an afternoon where it was really just relational time, but they wanted to be doing something. And so they went around the facility where we were and cleaned up things, quote unquote, cleaned up things, picked up everything. And so they came to me and said, hey, would you please, because they were a Spanish speaking country. So they said, would you please go tell the director that we cleaned up his supply closet for him? And I was like, okay. I thought maybe they had been asked to do that. So I went up to the director and said, hey, they just wanted to say, you know, that they cleaned up the supply closet. And the director looked at me with as sad a face as he could and said, well, we just cleaned it up last week.
Oh, no.
And so again, he thought was clean was not what the team that was there thought was clean. And they just took it upon themselves to do. And that's just a moment where you have to listen to the people on the ground. You have to ask the questions because we can often bulldoze our way in. And it's not that it's not out of good intention. They weren't trying to do anything wrong, but it caused a rift there. And so then I had to spend the next 20 minutes explaining to the director why it was, you know, just trying to make amends for something that really didn't need to happen. But and those that can happen so often when we come in thinking we know what's best, rather than asking the people in Guatemala, hey, is it a good idea for me to hand out cash when we walk around? Yeah. Or, you know, is what can we do around this facility to help out? Because had that question been asked, it may have been a different response
than
clean the closet.
Yeah, and I love that you talked about that. We sent a trip this year. It was one that was planned for March 21st of 2020. So we had flight, they were ready to go, and then everything got shut down. Yeah. So since we had flights and everything, we just said, let's just send the people that were signed up for that trip. So we sent them this year, and one guy got back. It was his first mission trip, and he's good friend of mine from the church, and he's part of one of my like teams that helps plan mission trips, but he's never been on one. So he went on this one, and great experience for him. But what he came back and said, and he's the one that I said I got a video testimony. It was him because of this one comment. Because he said, you know, I went on this trip expecting, like, I'm going to be changing people's lives and it's going to be so impactful. And he goes, I realized it's not about me, but it's about how can I support this ministry and these missionaries
That's so good.
In the best way possible.
The people that are doing it long term.
Yeah. And I told him, I said, if everybody could get that, have that understanding from a trip, we're fine. Yeah.
Well, Chris,
it'll do exactly what we want it to do.
Chris, thank you for your time. This is exactly why we wanted to have you on here and to have this conversation. As I mentioned before, and we kind of alluded to it, you know, I was the mission advancement pastor at County Line. I knew our impact trip ministry was lacking. I couldn't give attention to it. I had other things on my plate as well. And in fact, I believe, Andrew, you gave me a referral or you sent Chris's name.
I was going to say that.
Direction.
Yeah.
I'm just now remembering that. Yeah. But because of your experience and, you know, you have brought so much intentionality and strategic thinking to impact trips, and because you have a heart, as you mentioned before, you have a heart for justice, you have a heart for people to know and to experience Jesus, and for trips to be done in a way that may not be life-changing, but it will impact a life in one way or another.
Yes.
There is a lot of work that goes into that, into making sure that the opportunity is there for life change to happen if it does go in that direction. And so thank you for your time with us and just sharing
that
intentionality and strategy behind what it is that you do. And so we'll have a lot of the things that you reference, material and books and other things in the show notes for people to grab a hold of. You can also, if you have any questions on trips, you can also contact Chris by going to countylinechurch.org. Finding his contact information there. I'm sure he'd be more than willing to share any of this information with you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Chris. We're so grateful for the work that you're doing, grateful to get to partner with you, and we'll just keep praying that things open up so that these trips can go in the future.
Ready. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.